Hey everyone, I'm Jack.
And I'm Maddie, and this is the Advaita Podcast. Jack and I have a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. So yesterday we decided to start a podcast.
We don't think that we have anything special to say, but we do think that everyone has something to say.
We just value everyone's experiences and stories, so we thought we would start by being honest about ours.
So in this podcast, for every episode, we'll each come up with questions that the other hasn't heard yet. These are questions that we wonder about, and the answers are just us being honest about our story. Enjoy!
Okay, my first question for you, Jack, is what motivates you and why?
What motivates me and why? I would say a couple of years ago, what motivated me was like my family and trying to be good enough and as good as my family I thought wanted me to be. Now I think what motivates me is myself, like being the best, being the absolute peak of what I can be on, in all facets of my life. So in my health or in my job. I am working on that being my ultimate goal. I think that would be the healthiest me to be, would be to weigh my successes in life against what I think I'm capable of, not what other people are capable of or what other people want from me. So I'd say that motivates me most is my desire to be the absolute best to.
When do you think that shifted from your family?
I think my whole perspective shifted at the same time. It wasn't really a family thing as much as it was just like a personal thing. I started realizing that like I am important and valid. And when I started realizing that, then I realized like I can do... I don't know. I think it was more of an identity thing more than anything. Like I can be and do whatever I want to be. And that's allowed. I'm allowed to look at myself and be happy with myself and be proud of myself and that not be dependent on what other people think. So it wasn't necessarily about my family.
Yeah.
That just kind of was what was most affected because before my family played a huge role in my life. Anybody who knows me would know that. But as that perspective shifted, I just didn't really care as much about what my family thought of me because that wasn't number one. You know, I was number one, and that sounds a little bit egotistical, but...
You got to define what success was rather than someone else defining it for you.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so my first question for you is... It's kind of a two-part question, but we'll just talk about it a little bit. What do you find enjoyment in?
I could take that a lot of different ways. I think that's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately and talking with friends and people at work with a lot because I want to enjoy work and the whole 8-to-5 thing is kind of hard for me. And I've always enjoyed learning and school, and that's coming to a close in May when I graduate. So I think I'm trying to kind of redefine what I enjoy and find ways to bake time of enjoyment into my schedule. I think mainly relationships and people is what I enjoy, getting to know people, hearing people. I mean, that's a lot of the reason we want to do this podcast even is because we love people's stories and I just enjoy meeting new people. I enjoy doing new things, but then I also enjoy quiet time, quiet space for meditation or yoga, time of reflection. I think that helps fill me up. I maybe would put enjoyment along lines with something that fills me up. So things that I find draining probably
aren't on the top of your list.
Yeah. So there are some things that I like doing, but they exhaust me at the same time. Being an introvert,
This might be about semantics, and I might just not even know the difference between the words, but do you think there's a difference between finding enjoyment in something and finding joy in something? And I truly don't know, like, the answer.
I mean, from my perspective, I think so. I think there that's something that brings me joy might not be the same as enjoyment. I think maybe joy is a little richer and deeper and even more valuable than enjoyment. Enjoyment might seem a little less less important than joy.
Like you could find enjoyment in something that's fun, but that may not necessarily fill you up as a a human. Yeah.
Right. So like I enjoy coffee in the morning, but well, it does bring me joy. So I guess when you ask what do I find enjoyment from, I kind of started thinking about joy.
As joy, yeah.
Yeah. Which, but I guess enjoyment might lead to joy for me. And finding joy, I think, is important. I don't feel meaningful, or the things I'm doing don't feel meaningful if they're not filling me up with joy. All right, I have a second question for you, which kind of reminds me of the question you just asked me. That's funny. But my second question is, what makes you feel alive? And you can take alive as meaning whatever you think it means. But what makes you feel alive?
That's interesting. I've kind of, the reason I asked you that is because I've kind of wondered those things too. Like what does what I'm doing for fun right now actually bring me joy?
Right.
And does it make me feel alive? I kind of maybe would put those two on the same playing field.
But, yeah.
Like, for instance, I don't know what has happened recently, but I've been really loving playing basketball lately, which is so silly because I'm 23. I'm never going to go anywhere with basketball. It's just simply about something that makes me feel like I'm having fun. And like the first thing I thought of when you said what makes you feel alive is basketball.
Okay, so I really
so embarrassing.
As I was writing these questions, I told myself, just as a little game, also write out what you think he'll say. And I was like, if he's being honest, he'll say basketball. That's how I know if he's being honest.
And this podcast is all about honesty, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, nothing makes me feel more alive than, you know, playing basketball and like doing that thing that you dreamed of as a kid, you know, like
yeah, that's true.
Getting hot and making a few threes. But this isn't a basketball podcast, so I'm not going to sit and talk about it. But that truly does, like, that's just so much fun for me.
And, right.
And maybe I'm having a hard time differentiating between fun and alive. Because when I'm playing basketball, I'm having the most fun. But do I feel alive? I don't know. And again, is it a question of semantics? Does it really matter?
Right, yeah.
I feel good when I play basketball. But what makes me feel alive also, like just on a personal human level, is connecting in conversation like this. But that's not as fun as an answer. But that's, again, like you said, the whole reason we started this podcast is because you and I have these conversations every day, every other day. And that's what makes me feel close to you. That's what makes me feel in love with you. And dare I say, that makes me feel alive. These are, you know, these conversations are how I find myself, how I really truly understand who I am and what I am. And while basketball's fun and I get a lot of, you know, I get a high from it. I get a high from talking about stuff like this and learning more about myself and learning more about you and how I think the world goes round and why I think the world goes round and talking about it just... It helps me kind of move the sand away from the picture and see it a little more clearly every day and every time that we have these conversations. So it does, I would say, that makes me feel equally alive, but in a different type of rush, I would say.
Yeah, I can see that. Just uncovering the meaning of what it even means to be alive.
My second question for you is, these all are kind of leading into each other. I think we both just have the same the same ideas about how this would go. But my next question is, what is your purpose in life and how do we find purpose? Which that's really a really big one.
Yeah, that's kind of a deep question. how do I personally find...
Yeah, maybe let's just stick with the how do you find purpose, not you don't need to explain what your purpose is, but is there a way to find purpose? You know, a lot of people have the Bible to go off and that's their way of finding purpose. And if you, you know, aren't looking at the Bible or you're practicing the spirituality that doesn't have the Bible as a backbone for it, how then do you find purpose?
Right. Like I said in my last question, I think that's something that I've been trying to define and uncover lately. I think I'm in a phase of now that it's not being defined for me, now that it's not the Bible, now that it's not anything specific, it's more ambiguous and mystical, trying to find my purpose. And I think that's why I value either a job or a consistent hobby that is purposeful, because I'm not very good at just going throughout my day doing something blindly, making money. Money doesn't really bring me purpose personally. And I would go back to similar as my last answer, but I think a lot of it for me has to do with relationships and people. Hearing people and their stories makes me feel very purposeful. And even just love, I think, is maybe my purpose. Maybe that's everyone's purpose. It's just to uncover what it means to love and be loved and love other people for just as who they are. I think that's really important. And I think it makes me feel fulfilled to know someone and to know their story. And
well, and knowing those things explain to you how to love them. It helps you love them better.
Right. So I think it's hard to feel purposeful when you're just in a routine of life that you have to do. Like, there's so many have to's. Have to go to work, have to go to school, have to do these, you know, have to make dinner. And then where do I find that time to feel purposeful? I think that's what I'm trying to uncover now, is how do I put that into all of the have to's? You know, how do I go to work and talk to people throughout the day in a way that makes them feel seen and loved and heard, to bring in my purpose into my daily routine, if that makes sense. So I think that obviously we're close to being licensed for foster care. I think that's going to bring a lot of purpose into our lives and into our home. I know we always want our home to be a place that people can come into and instantly feel loved for who they are and not have to be anything other than that. So I think that will bring another layer of purpose, but I would say that the purpose of my life is to know people and love people. Okay, my next question for you, question number three, is a little bit different. It's, what have you recently changed your mind about?
That's a great question. There's a lot politically that I'm always wrestling with, and I don't necessarily want this to be a political podcast. I don't really love talking politics much unless I feel like they truly affect the humanity of people. I will always stick up for the human, especially in even when that comes down to politics. But so my mind has been changed a few times when I, you know, reconsider the humanity of how those politics affect people. So I don't necessarily want to name them because I don't really want a comments war talking about how I feel or what I believe, because I think we all believe different things and for different reasons. But if I were to answer that question outside of politics, it would definitely be spiritual. And I think the beauty of my spirituality right now is that it's constantly changing. It's always open to fluctuation and to changing tides, which I think confuses a lot of people and confuses me for sure, because I can never really define it. I can never really define what I feel about God or what I feel about, you know, our purpose, for instance. But I mean, recently I remember a shift in my mind when, and it wasn't changing my mind as much as a shift in perspective again, but when God became, or when God turned from man into a woman into a genderless being.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't necessarily change my mind. I didn't think like, God is a man. Wait, no, God is a woman.
Right.
But it was definitely a, as I was praying to whatever God that I felt like was out there, I felt a more masculine presence for a time. And then as things grew in me and questions started becoming more answered in my heart, I pictured God more as a woman at that point. God was a mother, a caregiver. Not to say that men can't be caregivers or men can't even be mothers, but I just felt a very feminine presence from yeah. God when I prayed and when I meditated. And
mm-hmm.
And now I would probably only describe God as it, because I don't really know mm-hmm. if I see much humanity in God as of now. And again, that's the tides changing in my spirituality. I used to think of God as a being, or not a human, but a being, I guess, with a heart and soul and a life and an attitude or whatever. And now I see mm-hmm. God as Christians would probably say the Holy Spirit. I see that a lot more right now out of God as a spirit that is in and around everything, but doesn't necessarily make decisions. And that's where Christians and I think would part ways on that, which is fine. But I don't necessarily think of God as a being any longer.
Do you pray?
I do. I will find myself in times where I feel worried or stressed or scared for someone else, and that muscle that I exercised every day in high school comes back, and it goes right into prayer mode. And then when I kind of look at that externally, I think, what am I praying to?
That was going to be my next question. Yeah.
And so I try to, and it is because that muscle is very strong still, because I worked it out for 18 years of my life.
Right.
Of praying, and that being the first thing I thought of when I was worried or scared or just in trouble, I would just pray. And at that point, obviously, it was God. It was a very masculine male God that I was praying to. And I have a hard time not going right back to that. And mm-hmm. not that that would be bad if I did. Sometimes I'm able to sit and rest in that, because I do find peace and feeling like there's a God out there that listens to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes I catch myself and I think, okay, let's actually think of this. What am I praying to? Right. How am I praying? What are the words that I'm saying? And then it kind of turns into more of a meditation of sitting in the presence of a divine being, sitting mm-hmm. in the presence of life and of energy and love. And that to me is a lot more powerful now, I feel. I don't necessarily think that I have prayers that will be answered. I don't worry about something and then pray. I pray that this worry goes away. But the worry naturally goes away when I rest in an energy, and when I rest in knowing that we're all connected and this is all just the way it is, I guess. I'm bad at defining it because I've allowed myself to be bad at defining it, but it's then hard to define it.
Yeah, it's very mystical, mm-hmm. which is beautiful. Do you address your prayers to someone, dear blank, or is it more just thoughts that come up and you are imagining a divine presence around you that you're speaking to, but you don't address it to anyone specifically? Because when you mentioned God being male and then more female and now genderless, I'm wondering if there's a name, or, you know, is it dear mother, or is it more just words?
If there's ever a name, I just say God. But I hardly do that, I think. I think mm-hmm. I mostly sit in that experience, sit in that meditation, and just say things that are causing me stress. Like, just giving them up, like throwing them into the void.
Right.
So like if I have a friend who's struggling, I'll just say that person's name. Or if I am, you know, up to my neck and work to do at work, I can sit and just say those things like, oh, I've got this to do. I've got this to do. This person mm-hmm. is driving me crazy. And it's not necessarily I want to be released from this, but it's all, not in a negative way, but it's all meaningless because it's all, it's just all yeah. there. It all is happening and it's right. happening around me. And there's nothing I can do to stop it. And if I just embrace it and let life come like a wave, and this wave hits me and next it'll be calm. And I don't know, I find peace in knowing that I sometimes find peace in knowing that life just doesn't stop and you're just going to get there. And
yeah.
You kind of don't have a whole lot of control over how you get to certain places. You just kind of find yourself there.
Yeah. I would agree.
My next question sounds like one of the questions that you asked, but it is different. And I'm going to rephrase it to point out the difference. But the question I wrote down is, what does it mean to be alive? And I'll rephrase it. What does it
That's funny. We both asked something about being alive.
I'll rephrase it though. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be a person? What does personhood mean to you?
We've talked about this a decent amount lately, which is something I'm trying to work out in my mind as someone who believes that we are all connected and we are all one. And the idea of...
Sorry, can I just... When you say we all are one, do you mean all humans or all living creatures? Like us and trees all have the same makeup?
I would say all living things have a connection of what I define as divine love. And that's more... I'm learning that we understand things at a deeper gut level when we experience it. And so it's hard to define in my thinking brain because it's more on a deeper experiential level. But so I believe that we are all connected even through nature. Like I feel a deep connection and oneness with nature, but I don't believe that nature is human. And I believe that all humans are connected through a divine love. And so even as I sit at work, I try to remind myself and have a presence of oneness with the people I work with and realize I am one with them. We have a divine love in common and have less me versus them, or have less of a divide with other people and see it more as a just deep, rich oneness. So then the idea of humanity and personhood, I guess those are two different things, but I think you mentioned them both.
I think I mentioned them almost as synonyms, which
I don't know, but I think that they're different, at least to me. I think a very fundamental part of humanity is being connected with other humans and having a deep connection with all living things. So then I think personhood is very different, and autonomy, I think, is also important, yet different. And it's hard for me to fit those two together because I want to realize my connection with the earth and with others and with all living things. But I also want to validate and affirm my autonomy and my own personal story.
And people's separateness almost.
Yes, because I also value having boundaries with other humans and realizing that we all have very different experiences in a very different context that makes up our perspective, and honoring and respecting my autonomy and others' autonomy. So, what does it mean to be alive and human? You know, it could be pretty meaningless, and I could just be trying to assign meaning to it because I'm someone who is motivated on meaning. And I often value myself and my meaning on loving and experiencing life with other people. That feels meaningful to me. So I need meaning to survive.
If we don't have that connection, then life seems a little more meaningless.
So we're going to assume that being alive is meaningful.
Yes.
Just for my own sanity. And I think both are really important. Being alive, being human, versus being an autonomous person in my own personhood. Mm-hmm. But how do they coexist and balance out, I think, is kind of confusing to me. Mm-hmm. But I do want to honor them both in their mm-hmm. own way. So I hope that makes sense. That was kind of my rambling thoughts.
I think it does. I absolutely think it does.
I hope I answered your question.
Yeah. Do you still feel that connection with people who are, I hesitate to even say bad people. I don't necessarily think anybody is a bad person.
Right.
But I think I conjure up an image when I say bad people, when mm-hmm. with people who do scary bad things that
right.
seem less than human. I would never assign to another human that they are less than human. I hate the idea of
right.
calling people animals.
Right.
That, you know.
Right. I agree.
But how do you assign that connection? How do you see that connection with them when you think they not only like lack that connection, but they refuse it? They
right.
they destroy that connection. They kill
right.
others.
Yeah.
Or whatever they do. But
yeah.
How do you explain that, I guess?
I think that sometimes I especially try to hone in on my connection with them mm-hmm. and think that like I am like that person is a part of me. I am a part of that person. And understanding that, as I said earlier, there's probably a very good reason. There was someone else who severed that connection mm-hmm. in them, possibly, or who caused them some sort of trauma that made them, you know, put them into survival mode and made them experience life in this way where they must control other
yeah.
human beings in order to survive, is what they've maybe been taught. So, for example, at work, we were playing this game where you choose like a this or that.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was had to do with Hitler. It was like, you know, make it to so that the whole thing with Hitler never happened
uh-huh.
or the other thing. And everyone chose so that, you know, World War II and
Hitler didn't exist.
Yeah, it never happened.
Didn't have the same life as he did, yeah.
Right. And I was the only one who chose the other thing. Everyone was like, Manny, what's wrong with you?
That's hard.
And I was like, well, Hitler has a context and a life
yeah.
story. And Hitler, I've heard, had a really rough upbringing. And maybe, like, you know, he was also, we are connected. I am... And everyone got really creeped out.
It's not very popular to find the connection with you and Hitler.
Yeah. People were very worried and I think
yeah.
looked at me a little cross-eyed for a couple of days and avoided me in the hallways.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't blame them. But I think that's important to me, realizing
yeah.
that I do have a deep connection with even people who maybe do quote-unquote bad things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm especially connected to those people and but I think that's the nature of existence
uh-huh.
is that I have a divine connection
uh-huh.
with people who maybe I don't want to associate
yeah.
with. I think that's where I can exercise the muscle of connection
mm-hmm.
and of experiencing divine love is when I do so with people I want to be different from.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be different from Hitler, but when I'm, and maybe at this point Hitler's a bad example, but
I mean, I don't think there is a bad example.
Oh,
that's
right.
the nature of this conversation, is that the
right.
worst of the worst, you are still connected to them.
Right. I want to especially
mm-hmm.
exercise the muscle of connection and of divine
mm-hmm.
love with people who I find myself not wanting to associate
mm-hmm.
with. I think that's when I grow the most in seeing that we are all one and we all experience this life together.
Mm-hmm.
I was excited to get to this final question
Great.
Because it now goes very well with our conversation, even though we did not plan these questions together. So my final question for you, Jack, is what reminds you of your humanity? And in turn, what reminds you of the divine or your divinity, if you will, if you believe in your divinity?
I love these questions.
So what reminds you of your humanity and your divinity, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Certainly, being in nature reminds me of my divinity. I think it's impossible for me to watch. It just sounds really obscure, and I get so in my head because it makes complete sense in my head.
Right.
But it's impossible for me not to see the divinity of the world, of nature, when I see the wind rustle through trees. It makes no sense. But seeing wind rustle through trees, I see movement and energy in something that was otherwise stagnant. And it makes no sense. It makes no sense other than, and obviously, you know, there's a scientific explanation for wind. I'm not saying
it makes sense, but
so that's why it's silly. And I assign pretty much all scientific anomalies to, not even wind is an anomaly. Right.
Right. I was gonna say.
But I see those things still as divinity. I see, you know, the waves of the ocean. Why is the ocean moving as it is? It's so magnificent and strong. Mm. And yeah, it's caused by wind and tides and somehow the moon or something, but but it's still like its own being, its own person. And it doesn't make decisions. It just is, and it just exists. And I see that. And for some reason, I connect it back to myself and my own divinity. I relate a lot of like wind to the same energy of my heart beating without my telling it to do so. Mm-hmm. My heart beating blood through my body, even if I didn't want it to, even on my worst day when I ask my heart, I plead with my heart to stop beating blood through my body, it continues to do so. It's just like the waves of the ocean. The ocean continues to throw waves at the shore, whether or not we want it to. Mm-hmm. And I see that and I just think we're the same thing. My heart is the same thing as the ocean and the wind and the trees. And I can't explain it better than that because I don't get it. And I don't get why it's so powerful to me to think of it that way. But that's exactly the way I think of it and exactly the way I love thinking of it. It gives me so much connection to it all. What reminds me of my humanity, I would say, is my ability to love and my ability to spot love in others. Who doesn't love their mom? But when I see my mom and all, you know, the terrible, terrible things I've said to her and the terrible things that we've, you know, said in arguments, but I look at her and I just want to weep because she's my mother and I love her and I don't doubt for a second that she loves me.
Right.
And in those moments, I spot the humanity of us all, that there's nothing that can happen to me or to my mom that either of us will reject the love that we feel for each other. I don't know how to explain it better than to say that it's love is what makes me feel the most human, and my ability to love others and my ability to love people, like you said earlier, that may not even deserve love in the eyes of most people, but to me that's like loving them is like explains to me and shows me that I am human, I am capable of loving all people, and they are human and they are deserved of love as is anyone else.
Right. I think it's beautiful that humanity makes you think of your mother, the woman and body that you grew inside and came from. Mm-hmm. What's more human than that? Mm-hmm.
My final question, I actually have three more questions that I'm choosing between right now. And I think this is one that we kind of talked about. Can we know the character of God, or does God even have a character in the first place? And if we can, how do we find the character of God?
My first thought is that that's making several assumptions.
Great. Love it.
One, that there is a God. And two, that I believe that there is a God with a character.
I'm asking you personally. So I know that you believe that some sort of being exists. Right. And I'm going to label it God.
Okay. So to me, like if I pray or if I write out prayer, it is to divine love, the presence that connects us all, which I have labeled divine love or divine presence. So if I equate that to the idea of God, which is kind of hard.
So you don't equate the two?
No. And I think that that's because I was raised with so many ideas of God. And it seemed very scary and ominous. And there's this heavenly male being that is very masculine and angry and tallying up things and keeping notes. And it it's not a presence I want to be a part of or draw near to.
So am I allowed to rephrase the question then? Does divine love have a character? And if so, how do we define or know the character of divine love?
Right. I know a lot of people would look to the Bible, which I can understand, but to me, the Bible is a collection of people's written experiences with God or divine love. And I think that that's beautiful, but I don't think it's a definite thing. I don't think that it's like the one way it works, a one size fits all. We all should experience God in this certain way because some people did. And I think it's beautiful to see a collection of history of people's experiences with a divine presence. I just don't see it as a rule book now for people who want to experience God and know the character of this divine presence. So I personally would not look to the Bible, but that's also hard because I would probably just look to my experience. And that's why I think that everyone sees God differently. That's why there's Buddha and so many different ideas of God, because we all experience a divine presence in different ways. And so it's hard to talk about it in one certain definite terms when we all see things so differently. How do we know the character of divine love?
This question is a lot more personal to you. How do you know the character of God? Because I don't think, and I agree with you, I think we both subscribe to the idea that we can't all have the same, like, that's
ideas of God.
We all don't. But how do you personally find the character of divine love? Or do you? Or do you think of it as a more of a force without any character?
I don't think I assign certain character qualities to my idea of a divine presence. I think that it's more with kind of my third eye, if you will. It's an experience, and it's something I want to live inside and something that I want to be a part of me, but I don't quite define it. I think I spent so much of my time growing up trying to define all of these certain things with the idea of God, and that became very rigid. And now it's much more mystical. I don't know. Obviously, I call it love and presence and divine. So those are maybe three qualities I would give the idea of this divine presence, if you will, that it is present, it's everywhere, it's loving, however you would define loving.
But it doesn't have an attitude, and it doesn't make decisions. It doesn't.
Not that I see it as. And as you were talking about prayer earlier, I often do the same things. Like, find myself praying if I'm stressed out, just because I always did. But then I try to more just like hone into the presence that I know is with me, the love that is with me. And as you said, make it more meditative and less trying to inspire some action out of a God being because of my certain plight. I think it's more about changing me than convincing God to change things for me. It's more about honing into the presence that is within me, the divinity that is within me, and making a change and maybe calming myself down from there, rather than feeling out of control, like I can't do it myself, and trying to make God do it for me. Like, no, I can, and there's a divine love within me that will help, you know, can calm me down or whatever it might be. So I don't think I have certain character qualities for God, and I know people often mention the character of God. That's kind of minutia to me. I don't really know what that means. I see God very outside of our ideas of a person with certain character qualities and intentions. I see it much more mystical than that and more experiential than that. So I don't really see it in that way, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's all of our questions I think that we have time for today.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening to the Advaita Podcast. I'm Jack.
And I'm Maddie.
See you next time.
Thanks.